My name's Sharon, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sharon.
And there's a line in the big book, in the back in the story, it says that the greatest freedom a person can ever know is to do what they know they ought to do because they want to do it. I'm still trying to attain that level of freedom. But it doesn't take me a lot to remember that I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and really I'm not out, you know, whatever I'm asked to give back, I'm more than happy to give back, because I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for you people. Tonight we were reading a story in the big book about a lady who started drinking when she was 15, and she was supposed to be at a slumber party, but she was at a slumber party, and she got drunk and was reminding me of my first drink. When I was 16, I was supposed to be at a slumber party, and I got drunk and I got sick, and I threw up and I loved it, and it rocketed me into another dimension. And I was immediately obsessed with alcohol because I had found the solution to my problems. My drinking had, my alcoholism has a lot to do with drinking. But before I picked up my first drink, I was a person who was better than everybody else without being as good as anybody. I never fit in. I had a lot of friends, and I fit in. But I somehow had gotten the idea that I was a very bad person. And I kind of had, you know, I had a big secret life. And I was brought up in a good home, a good Christian home. My parents were well-respected members of the community, and there was no drinking in my family, although there is alcoholism on my maternal side. And my mother, I grew up, there was no alcohol even allowed in our house. And I grew up hearing that the prisons were full of people who, you know, were in trouble with alcohol. Alcoholism was the cause for most of the violence and crime in the world. And something this powerful, I really had to try. And I immediately was gripped by alcoholism. The disease is not subtle in me. I loved being drunk. I always drank to get inebriated. There's, in retrospect, I see that one of the earliest signs of my alcoholism was that I could drink a lot. And when I was in high school, I used to drink with the guys because the guys could drink more. And I was always drinking, you know, everybody else would pass out or stop, and I was always, you know, left. Come on, let's go drinking. And I knew fairly early that I was in trouble with alcohol because it affected my schoolwork. I was 17 years old and I was skipping school to go get drunk. And I got sent away to school, and it didn't help, you know, didn't stop me from drinking. I had always was trying to figure out how to get without earning. I always wanted to be, but I never wanted to work to get there. And I was always incredibly unhappy. And my life unfolded. I'm a very fortunate person. My life unfolded in a very serendipitous fashion. And due to no effort on my own part, I've had, you know, a very good life, and I took the right hostages. early on, and set myself up pretty well. But I will tell you, and I, you know, what people told me, I was an alcoholic, and I was always going to do something about my drinking. And somebody took me to an AA meeting when I was about 19 or 20. And I gave it a thought because I knew that that I was possibly in trouble with this, but I didn't care. I didn't care. I thought I thought alcoholic meant that you like to drink, and I loved to drink, so I certainly didn't mind being called one. And I worked in a job that I didn't have to, you know, account to anybody too much for, and I would just always set everything up and maneuver everything to the next party or the next drink. My life was consumed by this disease from a very early age. And about when I was 24 years old, with the help of a whiskey bottle on a Saturday night, I became pregnant, and I remember asking everybody what I should do, as if somebody's going to tell you what to do in a situation like that. And I gave birth to my daughter. And while I was pregnant, I knew that you weren't supposed to drink. This was the first time that I really had to look at things. And I knew the implications of this and the repercussions from this. And I would go to my local. I had a lot of English friends, and we had a local at the Cassiette on 4th and St. Catherine Street. And I would go in there, and I would order a grenadine and pineapple juice and watch everybody drink beer, which was my drink of choice because I had nearly killed myself with scotch. And this was the only thing I could drink, you know, massive amounts of it, you know, quart after quart of it, and be okay. And I couldn't drink quart after quart of scotch and survive. So I would watch everyone have their beer, and I would decide to just have one. Then after about three of these sickening grenadine and pineapple juices, and I would inevitably get drunk. And when my daughter was born, I made a promise to God that if everything was okay, that I would quit drinking. And when my daughter was born healthy, I celebrated by getting drunk in the hospital. But it was the beginning of the shame, and it was the beginning of the terror. And I still had, I'm an alcoholic, as is described in Chapter 5 of the Big Book. I have this disease that only Alcoholics Anonymous has ever been able to help. This is the only solution for me. And I have a progressive disease. And when I was 26 years old, as long as I didn't pick up a drink on any given day, I had a chance of staying sober that day. And it hadn't progressed to the point where I had no choice yet. So I decided, when my daughter was born, we made a geographical cure. But, you know, I'm not one for, you know, moving a lot. It takes a lot of energy. So my geographical cure was from downtown Montreal to NDG. I don't know why I thought that I wouldn't drink if I was in NDG. There was a Depanneur at the corner of the street, so it went that far. And I used to, you know, I'd be sick in the mornings, and, you know, the other mummies would be going to the park, and I thought if I go back to school and finish my education, I'll be okay. And I'll be a better person. So I went back to school. And when my daughter started school, I became president of home and school. And I started trying to do all these things that I thought that would make me an okay, normal person. And the whole time, whenever I got the chance, I drank. And I eventually ended up, you know, but I loved my child. My alcoholism is like a, it's like it was until I got into recovery, like a bubble. It was like a glass jar that I was stuck inside and I couldn't actually ever reach out. I was trapped in it. And so I ended up in a job I loved, and my daughter was very healthy, my life was fine. I ended up at 3:30 every Friday. This is just an idea throughout my 30s. At 3:30, as soon as the bell rang, that was like nirvana. And I would go and I would drink until whenever I passed out Sunday night, and I would wake up on Saturday night. I would wake up on Sunday and I didn't drink because I could never stop once I started. And I had to go to work Monday morning. And between Monday and Friday, I didn't touch it because I had no control. And I was the most miserable person. It's like, don't talk to me. And I would live. In September, when we would go back to school, I would just take the calendar and go through looking for ped days and breaks. And sometimes, every New Year's, not every New Year's, but in as my 30s, as I started to get older, most years on New Year's, I would decide, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to try and control this half the month. And I would put big black crosses through, you know, I would maybe get halfway through January, well, into February with this, and put big black X's through the calendar on days that I drank. And I remember looking at them one time going, this isn't bad. I only got drunk 17 days in January. And just like hang on to those days when I didn't. Or, you know, I have no other one to tell you. I'm completely obsessed with alcoholism. And, you know, this can come to no good. About the time I'm 40, it's my 40th birthday, and I figured out what's wrong with me. And, you know, my marriage is over, but that was okay. But I was willing, and I was sick, and the children were no longer children. They were monsters. And the principal didn't understand. And the director of the program I worked in took me out for lunch and said, Sharon, you got to, you know, talk to me or talk to me. And I honestly didn't know anything was wrong. But I was starting to get the shakes quite badly during the day. And every time my parents would come to visit me, I wouldn't drink in front of my mother. And one time they were coming to visit, and the night before, I remember I scratched the skin off of my abdomen, my lower back. I was just itchy and sick. And I remember cursing my mother for causing it. And so I'm willing at this point to go see a psychiatrist because I'm okay with the idea that I have a very serious mental illness, but I'm not okay with the idea I'm alcoholic. I'm okay with anything else but have been told that. So needless to say, I don't stop drinking. I don't actually lose my job. I'm given such a serious demotion that I can make more money collecting unemployment than they're willing to pay me at this point. So I quit, and I'm just going to do what I was born to do, which is I'm going to become an artist, and life is going to be good. I'm going to do all the things, the people that bothered me and all the things that are wrong. I'm just going to just get everything out of my life and be left alone. And I start to drink, and I start to drink daily. I had been doing that. I mean, in the summer, I had 2 months off, and I drank every day of my vacation. As my alcoholism progressed, I no longer had the choice of getting up in the morning Now I had no job. I had no longer had the choice of, well, am I going to drink today or not? I passed into that stage of alcoholism where I might not be able to put it down for 3-4 days at a time. And I started to get very sick. And my daughter went to live with her father. And that was okay, too. She was healthy enough. She didn't want to see this. This is in the last year of my drinking. I was laying in my own urine in my bed. I would have a bottle beside the bed so that I would have something to drink when I woke up, if I could drink when I woke up. I weighed about 118 pounds, and I couldn't eat very much, and I had a paralysis in my leg that was a neural palsy caused from the thiamine being the vitamin B in the thiamine being stripped off of my spinal cord. And my doctor, my GP said, he said, don't be ashamed of this. You have a disease called alcoholism and it can strike anyone. And I'm going to put you on a prescription dose of thiamine and I'm going to give you some Valium to calm your nerves. And you've got to sober up. And I had also lost, I was getting a palsy in one hand. I would be writing and lose the ability to write. So he told me this was caused by alcohol because it strips the vitamin B from your nerves, the covering of your nerves. So I took the Ensure, and I took the prescription, the thiamine, and I was okay in about 2 days. And I remember sitting with my friend, my drinking buddy, and I said, you know, they put on a package of cigarettes that this can cause lung cancer. They warn you. And yet, a simple little warning on a bottle of beer, please take thiamine. Simple. But they don't do it, no. And I believe that. And she says, yeah. That makes sense. So anyway, you know, my house of cards started to fall. And my parents, the wonderful people that they were, that I gave such trouble to, came and said, look, you know, so now my income is decreasing, my expenses are increasing, and I've got, you know, when you slip past that line, it all comes tumbling down so fast. And my parents came and they said, look, if you're willing to go to a doctor and address these issues, we will bail you out financially. So I said, sure, if you think so. And I went to the Montreal General and they for the interview. And I honestly, I thought, this is so silly, but I needed the money. So I went and I was interviewed and they wanted to put me in the hospital right then and there. And I, you know, okay. So I went into the Montreal General in October of 1993. No, in August of 1993, and I spent 21 days in there. And during that time, it occurred to me that I was in there because I was sick. And I was also in there, I was 12-stepped when I was in there by a guy who had been sober and Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 years. And he had slipped. And he told, we were the same age and we had kind of the same story. And his aging parents were visiting him and we were just so ashamed. And I said, this AA thing, does it work? And he said, yeah. He said, I was sober in AA for 2 years. I slipped and it's too late for me. I can't get back. But yeah, it works. Go. It's not, I thought it was a bunch of old men in the circle sharing. So, and you know, I identified with him. We were the same age. And so I came out of the hospital and I came to an AA meeting. And I thought, I like I loved it. I thought it was great, and I liked all the people, and I liked what I heard, and I knew without a doubt I was alcoholic. There was no debate anymore about this. I was very ill physically. And my problem was that I was different. And my problem was that I had never succeeded with anything in my life. So I couldn't possibly imagine beating this disease that was just so much bigger than I was. And I came to meetings. I remember one of my drinking buddies came by the house one day, and I said, "Look, you know, I got to go to this meeting." And she said, "Can I wait here for you?" And I said, "Sure, I'll be back in an hour." It was around the corner, back in an hour and a half. And I came back carrying a case of beer under my arm, and my buddy said to me, "These AA meetings, are they working?" And I said, "I'm not sure." And my first sponsor said to me, "Don't drink and go to meetings." So I never went to meetings when I was drinking. And she also said to me, she came to my house, she said, she looked through, you know, she got a good idea of my situation. She said, this would have been in about October of 93. She said, "If you drink again, you have no idea what's going to happen to you." And I thought to myself, for somebody who had 10 years sobriety, this woman was pretty stupid to say this to me. For 26 years, I had been drinking, and I knew exactly what would happen to me. Because it had happened to me every day for 25. I was going to go out, start drinking, get drunk, pass out, feel like crap, wake up. That's what would happen to me. And I did go out and pick up a drink. And when I got back to AA, I went to her and I said, "You were right. I had no idea what was going to happen to me. I lost my house. I was this close to bankruptcy. I had nothing left. And I dragged myself into a meeting, and I could hardly hold the big book. And somebody looked at me and said, 'Are you sick?' And I said, 'Yeah.' And they said, 'Good.' And I thought, well, all right, never, you know. And I started coming back to meetings. And I had a wedding to go to, and I just thought maybe it wasn't important to mention this. And, of course, when I went to the wedding, like, I was seated right beside the bar. So I came home, nothing happened. I got drunk, nothing happened. But I came home, and I woke up the next morning, and I realized that if I was ever going to stop drinking, I had to stop drinking. This was pretty big for me. And I got on my knees because I knew that if I didn't stop drinking, I was going to die. And I asked God to help me stop drinking. I was willing to go to any length to get sober. I just didn't really, I didn't care. I wanted to live, but I, not that way. And I went back to the meetings, humble, and opened my ears, and my sponsor said, "You know that voice that always keeps you going back to drinking, that always says, 'Oh, you know, just go have one, you might as well, you're going to anyway,' and the disease, and the voice that tells you that you're not as good as and that you're a failure. Did you ever ask yourself where that voice came from?" And I looked at her and a light bulb came on, because I never had. I had never questioned the voice. And I realized that my disease of alcoholism talked to me. And it was huge. It was a huge moment for me. And after I surrendered, as in the story we read tonight, I had a spiritual experience. And I was lucky. They were celebrating. This is now, we're into the end of, it was, I thought my sobriety date is the 1st of October, 1994. And they were celebrating in October of 1994, 50 years of AA in Montreal at the Palais de Congrès. And I had such a moving experience, such a physical feeling, and I knew that I had come home. I knew that one day at a time, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, I didn't quite know that then, that I didn't have to drink, and that there was 50,000 people who had the exact same disease that I did who were sober. And I started to do the steps. Step one was done when I surrendered, and I had the desire to drink taken away from me, which I was in 4 stage alcoholism. I was physically addicted to alcohol, and I had been detoxed, and I had the desire to drink removed, and I started making coffee and picking up ashtrays and getting sober buddies, and we would go here on Monday night and here on Tuesday night, and I took Saturday off to watch videos, and I just started to get sober and get involved in the steps and talk to my sponsor every day. And I remember about 9 months sober, I thought, this is too good to be true. And I got really scared. I thought, you know, you're 42 years old. If you're lucky, you could live, chances are, maybe, you know, a few decades. And if you think you can do this without drinking, you're crazy. And I was really scared, and I told a friend that. And they said, take the third step. And I took the third step in the sanctuary of the church of where my home group was, and I physically felt the relief of my third step. And also a friend in the program said, it says in our big book that contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, we never have to drink again one day at a time. And I thought, okay, I can do that. And I read in the big book, I read in the 12 and 12 that only those who scoff at prayer, the only people who scoff at prayer who are those who have not consistently prayed enough. So, of course, I went around doing a survey. Do you pray? How much do you pray? What do you think of prayer? And I got the same answer everywhere. And everywhere I went in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got the assurance that this was the truth. And I started to put together, the longest I have ever been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous was the first 10 days. This was a miracle. I'd never been sober 10 days since I was 15 years old. And then, you know, time marches on. And I have always had a home group. I've seen people come and go, and for me, I stay here because I feel that if I am given the opportunity to give back just a little bit of what was given to me, then that's the greatest feeling I have today. And if somebody comes to me and asks me to help them get sober, then I am honoring everybody that was here for me when I got sober. And nothing feels better than that. And that took a long time. It took a long time to get to that. My sponsor had me get on my knees every night. For the first 6 months I was sober, I got on my knees and said the third step prayer. And I said it by rote because I couldn't have cared less about being a witness to anything for anybody. But I sure wanted to be released from the bondage of alcoholism. And that and many other things have come true for me. And I have the greatest home group in the world. And I wish the same for everyone here tonight. And I want to thank you all for my sobriety. And have a good 24 hours. Thank you.